The Citadel Cafe is proudly sponsored by TweakedAudio.com. For high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds, visit TweakedAudio.com and use our code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's TweakedAudio.com.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 101 for February 26th, 2014. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I gather together to talk about the geeky crap that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. And joining me this evening for the very first time is Mr. Adam Christensen of the MacCast. Welcome, sir.
Hey, Joel. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to have you on the show. We've been internet and in-person friends for a couple of years now. Yeah. First meeting in Nurtacular in Utah in, I think, 2012 was the first time.
Two years ago.
Yeah, I remember there was like barbecue ribs involved, I think, in our first lunch.
That was good.
Yeah, that was a good day. That was a very, very good day. So how are things? It's been a little while since we've actually had a chance to chat.
Good, busy, as always. I just bought my this year Nerdtacular tickets, which went on sale yesterday.
Yeah, Jocelyn was home today briefly after work because she does volleyball, like a rec volleyball league on Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. So she's got like this teeny tiny window. And it was this whirlwind of her coming in, talking about airline tickets and prices and Nerdtacular tickets and then going to volleyball. So the Nerdtacular is in the air around here, but we have made no decisions as of yet. We are going, but we just don't know what flights we're going to need to get and what our budget's going to be for that. So we've got to sit down later tonight and take a look.
Didn't even worry about that part of it yet.
Yeah.
I don't even know if the information's up for like hotel deals and all that fun
stuff. I believe Scott did a Q&A the other night, and a lot of that stuff was linked in the blog post on Nerdtacular.com. So, we have to check that out as well, just to kind of figure out how things are going to go. But we think we're going to be able to get tickets in and around like $500 or $600 return a piece, which is not bad considering how far away we are. Yeah. It's not like being at being in California where it's kind of like, what is it, a 2-hour flight?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like up and down. I mean, it's not very, and the price is usually not too bad.
So No.
I got it easy.
Yeah. Well, we last year it was like 13 hours of like flying and in between flying and all that kind of stuff from our, you know, kind of doorstep to getting to the hotel or the resort in Utah. But we're hoping to find a different hub in the States this time around and just make two hops. So we can't go all the way because there's nothing direct from Halifax. But if we can get to like Detroit, or I don't think there's any direct from New York. There might be direct from Boston, but there's usually it's Detroit or Chicago is kind of like the stop we have to make.
Yep.
But this time hopefully we'll be able to go right from one of those central kind of Midwest hubs to Salt Lake City. So
hopefully.
I mean, we're going either way. It doesn't matter whether it takes us a day to get there or not. We make a big vacation out of it though. Like we stay for 4 or 5 days, so it's we can make up any kind of lost sleep in the first couple of days. It's not too bad. But I mean, you this is your first time on the show, so I wanted to take an opportunity to make sure that our listeners know about the MacCast. You know, like kind of what you usually do with the show. And
sure.
I don't even know, like, how long have you been doing it? It's been a long time, hasn't it?
I'm in my 10th year.
Wow, that's awesome.
I started in 2004, December 2004. So December 2014 will mark the end of the 10th season or year, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Right? Wow,
yeah,
that's amazing.
I've been doing it for since almost the beginning.
I was going to say, you must have been one of the first ones out there then.
I think the first, I was one of the first straight up Mac podcasts. There were a couple other shows at the time that were more like internet streaming radio. They had jumped on the Real Audio bandwagon. Remember mm-hmm. that? When you would mm-hmm. actually just like stream audio. And I think one of the producers might have started taking the Real Audio stream and was taking the recording, the 8-bit recording, and throwing it into an RSS feed. So depends on technically what you want to call a podcast. But mine was the first Mac podcast, I think, that was produced 100% to be a podcast, if that makes sense.
Wow, that's quite a little notch on the belt.
Yeah, I guess so. So if people haven't figured it out already, the MacCast is an Apple Mac related podcast that I produce each week. Week is a loose definition. I try to put about 4 shows a month, roughly on a weekly schedule. And we talk about just Mac news and events that are going on. So, and it's just me; it's a solo podcast. So
you say we, but that's misleading because you do the thing solo. And I've thought about it a couple times here on the Citadel Cafe. You know, what happens if I don't have a guest or can't schedule somebody? If I would have the stones to go ahead and just solo a podcast, I mean, I think
lots
it would be,
of prep.
Yeah, it would be really short, I think, because a lot of what happens on TCC is just like a lot of banter back and forth about just stuff people find randomly on the internet they want to share. And I remember a little while ago I was cafe sketching and I was listening to the MacCast, just going through my podcast rotation, and I was sitting there thinking, going, man, like he does long as in it's too long, but it's a lot of content to be a solo caster on.
Yeah I mean, there's lots of stuff to talk about, and I really look at it like I'm talking to the listener, right? The person on the other end that's picking up the podcast. So, I just sort of take that approach to it. But really, it's my sort of comments and opinion on the latest news stories. So I call it news commentary. I'm not a news podcast. Like, I don't go out and find stories. I'm basically culling through all of the popular Mac blogs and things like that, and then finding stories that interest me that are Apple focused and talking on those. And then I take questions and comments, and people will ask me stuff either through email or I have a voicemail line or sending in an audio comment. And I just try and answer questions and help people with their problems with their Macs and iOS devices. We do, software recommendations, all that sort of thing. So it's really fun. It's sort of born out of Mac user groups or computer user groups, if anybody was ever in those. They're sort of a dwindling thing. So the idea was to kind of build a community where we could talk about Mac stuff and geek out. And a lot of the people who listen have told me that they really like it because they don't have an outlet at home. You know, their wife or their spouse is just really not interested in their Apple Mac fandom. So it gives them an outlet. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I butt heads with Jocelyn sometimes because we both have iPhones, and she loves her iPhone, but she's a PC gamer to the core. So when she has to, use the Mac for, maybe we're watching something on this big screen in the living room, or she was at for a while she was using the Mac to podcast when she first started out, and she hated it. She would just so whenever I'm complaining about some sort of Mac stuff, she just kind of glazes over, like, yeah, it's not like she thinks Windows is necessarily better, but it's just that she doesn't live in this world. So
it's different.
So she just like, ha, suits you right for living in that world, that it's not treating you nice right now. And I think it's probably because, like, it happens every once in a while. I mean, everybody's got computer glitches. It doesn't matter what, OS you're on. But I feel like every single time she turns on her system to do something, there's a complaint or a curse word coming out of her studio. Well, and whereas me, it's like once in a while.
Yeah. So here's an interesting thing. So I'm also a web developer and programmer, and I was a C# VB .NET programmer for 5 or 6 years. So, I mean, I know the Windows world, and this was the deal, is I would do Windows all day at work, and I would come home and be on the Mac. And the key difference to me was that it always seemed in some way, almost every day, there was at least one point in the day where I was fighting with that PC for something. Whether it was something, some days it was something simple, like I just couldn't find a setting because it was buried so deep in this weird convoluted chain, or, literally it just was breaking down and not working. And it's not that I don't have those experiences from time to time on the Mac, but it was more like exactly what you're talking about. It was sort of the ratio of those experiences, the number of times when it seemed like the PC, the technology, was sort of getting in my way of being able to do the programming I needed to do versus that same experience on the Mac is drastically different. And I think one of the big reasons why I'm still a Mac fan. I'm not anti-Windows or anything, but the other thing I'm curious is, so what version of Windows is she running?
Oh, that's a really good question. it's not 8. I can tell you
it's
that
not
right now.
Probably
no,
it's 7. Yeah, see, so
I don't even know if she's
I have
on 7.
8, and it's that's just a nightmare. Because I have to test. So I run it Windows and Parallels. So I actually have 7, 8. And I used to have XP, although I think I finally killed off that virtual machine.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she's on 7.
Yeah, 7's pretty nice.
Yeah, I think that I'm using her old PC in the studio here as my gaming rig. Because she had a nice one, and then she picked up a doghouse system. Now I've got the I say the old one. It's still quite nice, but I've got the system that she doesn't need anymore. That's not running 7, I don't think. I could be wrong. I pay so little attention. Like, to me, when I'm on a PC, I might as well be on a gaming console. Like, I mean, I turn it on to do one thing. Maybe two. I'm either on, like, Chrome, on, like, DeviantArt or something, just bumming around, or I'm playing a video game. And I don't have much time for those. So, I mean, the amount of times I actually turn on the PC in the run of a week lately has been pretty nil anyway. So it's mostly been Mac for me, but I don't do much the artwork that I do. It's all kind of like multi-platform. Like, it doesn't, like, I've done some graphic design and some development work, but it's always been kind of like platform agnostic. It really doesn't matter.
Right. Yep.
So I haven't run into those issues. Well, if you don't mind, I know that where you take, you know, listener emails and stuff like that, there was a funny kind of happenstance earlier in the month where I was going to write in to the MacCast because I had a question about external storage. And then, lo and behold, you did a show that was focused on external storage. And I haven't had a chance to complete it because every time something new was being talked about, I had to pause and then look it up and then figure out what it is that I was looking for. So the question that I had was, like, I'm dealing with an Apple router. It's the AirPort Extreme. Mm-hmm. I've got two external drives, which are hooked up through a dongle, and then that USB dongle is then plugged into the Extreme. And I've been
you're doing the air disk, basically. Yeah, what Apple calls their air disk.
Yeah, but I'm not able to. I mean, Time Machine isn't working. I can use the externals for my iTunes library, but when the externals aren't being used, they spin down.
Yep.
So if you go back to them, you have to then wait for it to spin up, which is not that long, but it seems long in computer world where everything is like just instantaneous and we're all used to this instant gratification. And I'm also trying to figure out, like, what would be a better long-term storage, because granted, I have these two, you know, little MyBook externals on the desktop. But I mean, if there's ever any a problem here, then I mean, all of my stuff is still local. It's only a single backup. Like, I don't have any redundancy there. So, like, at the end of that episode, which I will eventually go back and finish, what was the kind of, like, the, not the everyman, but, like, what was the what would you say is the best external storage for the average user? Like, I'm not doing videos. I'm not doing crazy amounts of stuff. I just kind of need to make sure all my stuff is safe.
Direct connected USB drive.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, for the sort of meets all your needs, you're going to have the least trouble with sort of solution. I mean, that's my opinion. Some of the network attached storage solutions can be good in the right situation.
Right.
I am not a huge fan of the air disk, nor am I a huge fan of the time capsule, which is basically, you know, an air disk, but the drive is internal inside the AirPort Extreme. I mean, take AirPort Extreme and stuff a USB hard drive in it. You've got a time capsule.
Yeah.
I will tell you right now, Apple does not officially support Time Machine 2 and Air Disk Drive, as far as I know.
It doesn't.
It keeps changing. You kind of have to hack it, and you can make it work if you're willing to tinker quite a bit. And I know people who have and have successfully been able to do it. For those people who don't know what we're talking about, so the AirPort Extreme is just a router, and the air disk technology, there's a USB port on the back, and you can plug in an external drive to basically turn it into a network attached drive. So you can take your USB hard drive, plug it in, and then it will show up on the network. And that works great. It should work fine for, and like you said, for your iTunes libraries, your iPhoto libraries, just for network storage. But you, I mean, you're at the mercy of the transfer rate of your Wi-Fi too. So it's going to be slow for large, you know, for moving large files back and forth. It does have that spin down problem, which I've heard before. I don't remember if there's a workaround for like disabling that or not.
Yeah. And again, like, I'm not sure if I'd necessarily want to disable that because like these external hard drives, I mean, they're not meant to be spinning all the time. It's not like I want to use them for, you know, paging or constant use, because then of course they'll end up, you know, wearing out more, like a lot sooner than they're supposed to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was just curious to see if there's an easier solution, and there does not appear to be.
No, I will tell you right now, I have three USB hard drives attached directly to my MacBook Pro, plus a Drobo, plus a FireWire drive.
So how do you attach it all?
I've got the USBs on a USB hub. I have the Drobo is actually a 5D, a new 5D, so it's Thunderbolt.
Mm-hmm.
And then the FireWire 800, because this is a 2011 MacBook Pro, so I have a FireWire 800 port. That's how I handle it. And I have very few issues with any of these drives. So.
Yeah, and that's my issue, is that I have a multi-tier studio where I'm at a standing desk for podcasting and, you know, some admin work, and then I take the MacBook Pro that I have and I move it across to the other side of the studio, which is not far, but it's far enough to not be plugged into things. And that gets hooked up into the Cintiq, and that's where I do a lot of my digital artwork. So the networked drives, or having at least some of the stuff available via Wi-Fi is essential. I don't necessarily have it plugged into a USB kind of dongle all the time. And, you know, like, you know, because you've got a hub, I only have the two USB ports on the MacBook Pro. So I was, you know, using the dongle on the AirPort Extreme is what I was using to kind of expand that capacity. But it looks like, you know, maybe the dongle directly into the MacBook Pro whenever I can is probably the better solution.
Yeah, you might look into, I mean, if you really need to be networked, the thing that I hear from everybody, and in that episode, I think I had David Hamilton on, and he's a big fan of them. They're a little bit pricier, but the Synology Disk Station network attached drives, they have a built-in iTunes server, so that will work for music, not movies and all that other stuff. But you can, you know, throw all your music in there and access it from, you know, anywhere through iTunes on the network.
Right.
You know, DRM-free stuff, but Apple doesn't sell DRM stuff anymore. So that, I think it'll do Time Machine backups. I think it's already kind of set up to be able to manage that. And it would be network-attached storage. And they're supposed to work really, really well. They're a little more tinkery to set up, but I think if you've got, you know, intermediate tech skills, and I know you do, then you probably wouldn't have any trouble setting up and configuring one. So if you really need to be mobile, you don't need to be wired down, or you just can't be wired down. So that was the other gist of that whole episode, was that storage solutions are really personal and they are application-specific. So you kind of have to apply the right solution to your given situation.
Yeah. What was the name of that again?
It's called a Synology Disk Station. There's a bunch of different models. They have, you know, starting at the lower end, two drive models where you can just mirror the drives to get your redundancy all the way up to, you know, like multi-bay drives. So nice.
Very cool. Yeah, I'll have to look into that, because one of the things that
apps, and they have all kinds of apps you can run on there. So you can run, you know, Plex, and it can integrate with your Dropbox and all that.
Oh, cool.
Stuff.
Cool. Yeah. That's the other thing I'm looking into. I mean, I've been using Dropbox more and more for client stuff, and I for some of my important, you know, files like my comics and some things that I would be, you know, heartbroken if anything happened to, I'm looking at paying for Dropbox, because I know that I don't really have more than 100 gigs of stuff, you know, at the moment to store. So I could probably use the Dropbox for some offsite storage. I did actually have a wasn't CrashPlan, it was one other, I think it was, that's escaping me now. It was one of the popular online storage.
Carbonite?
Yes, it was Carbonite. And there was something to do with going cross-border. I mean, me in Canada, and they're only down in Boston, but for whatever reason, I was even on the phone with their tech support, and it would just bring my computer to a grinding halt whenever it would update. And it would, I mean, it eventually got through its initial sort of... copy paste, you know, your stuff is safe in the cloud. And then whenever it would just update a file or two, like, I mean, I would be unable to work on my system. So, I mean, it really wasn't practical for me. And I mean, and they were really nice about it. Like, obviously I got a refund and they looked into it and they're like, yeah, there's just, we don't know what it is, but just, you know, your pipe to our pipe is just not happening. So, and it was too bad because it was a really reasonable price for, you know, for offsite storage.
I'm a crash plan user in fans.
So. Yeah, I've been meaning to look into that as well. So I'm debating between, you know, Dropbox, crash plan, that sort of thing. I'm going to be eventually picking up a new system. I'm looking at upgrading to a 27-inch iMac, at which point I will not need to be quite so mobile because with both a laptop and a desktop, I can use the laptop for moving around and not really have a lot of important stuff on it, and then use the desktop for all the important stuff.
Then I already predict you're going to be coming back to me with the classic question when someone does the desktop mobile thing, which is, how do I sync my stuff back and forth?
Yeah.
It's a whole other question.
Yeah,
well, we'll get into that someday.
Someday down the line. Don't complicate things. Don't crush the dream. I got really excited when I figured out which computer I wanted and needed, and now
that's a nice machine. You'll like it a lot.
I hope so. Yeah, I had a friend walk me through some recommendations for what my needs were, so I'm really quite happy with it. So I guess we can move on to what we've been watching. I can lead off if you want, because I do have something really cool that just happened before the show. Are you familiar with Dave Kellett's comic strip Sheldon?
I am not familiar with that one. No.
Dave is one of the more well-known webcomic artists online because he was one of the four guys that wrote How to Make Web Comics with Scott Kurtz, Chris Straub, and Brad Geiger. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Dave has co-directed a documentary film about comic strips called Stripped.
Yeah, this looks cool.
Yeah, and I was a backer back when it was on Kickstarter over a year ago, I think. And they've been having to jump through so many hoops to get like the legal rights to, you know, display images from cartoons and comics that have been like, you know, out of print for years. And, you know, like the estate has got copyright and you have to go through all these lawyers and stuff. Yeah.
It takes forever.
Yeah, exactly. So finally, the film is finished. I got the email from Kickstarter late last week saying that, you know, my package is going to be on its way soon. Obviously, the DVD that I ordered is going to take a little while to get to me, but I also have a digital version coming to me with the Kickstarter package that I have. So that'll obviously become instantaneous, you know, to me whenever they release the film officially. And it's coming up soon. I feel like a couple of weeks maybe. But just before the show, I got an email update from the Kickstarter backer, I guess, newsletter, that Bill Watterson has drawn the poster for the film, and it's Bill Watterson's first public cartoon in almost 20 years. It's mind blowing. He's even interviewed. He gave a phone interview on the documentary. So this is
so cool.
Yeah, I mean, for those of you who don't know in the listening audience, I mean, Bill Watterson of course is the cartoonist behind Calvin and Hobbes, and is famously recluse and does not talk to media very much about his work, if at all. So the fact that Dave was able to interview him, but then also got this piece of artwork from him for the strip film, I mean, it's a really huge deal for, I mean, all the artists I know are completely geeking out about it right now. So
I like the dog with the iPad.
Yeah. Yeah. it's a really, really fun image. And this is not something I have watched yet. Some backers, depending on your level, got some sneak peeks, but I can tell you right now, this will be the first thing that I watch from my Kickstarter backing, I guess, palette when it comes in, because I am so excited for this movie. I will be certainly letting everybody know about it when I get a chance to watch it. But it's really something that's been circulating the comic world on the internet for a while, and I'm super stoked. So if you haven't checked it out, you can look up Stripped Film. You got to be careful about that URL, which Dave found out quite early online. And if you looked for Stripped The Final Push on Kickstarter, you'll also be able to see a lot of the cool rewards, features, and people that are included in the documentary. So that's one of the things that
awesome.
One of the things I've been really excited about.
It's on pre-order on iTunes too, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. No, they're all over the place now. They've done a really good job of kind of like dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's as far as distribution and making it accessible for people. So what have you been watching, man? Like I just finished. We don't often get probably, to talk about stuff like this.
Yeah, probably like a lot of geeks. I just finished totally binge watching Game of Thrones season 3.
Nice.
It finally hit iTunes on the 17th.
Yeah. Yeah, it was right? It was like last week or the week before.
So it's today. Yeah, today is the 26th. So in 9 days, less than that, because I finished it several days ago. So I plowed through that. I knew I was going to, and now I'm completely, you know, disappointed because I've got to wait like again for forever. I don't want to go if I don't want to go rip it off.
Yeah.
Or what I really should do, because HBO came out and officially said that they don't mind people sharing their Go logins, I guess. Like the CEO of HBO came out, it's like, yeah, we know people do that. So all right.
Huh. I need to get
somebody who has an HBO Go subscription to give me their login so I can maybe watch the next season. But then I'll just be waiting for the next one. So I don't know. You know, it was, I'm not going to spoil anything for anybody, but I'll just tell you, it was like over way too quick. I was like, wow, I can't believe I just finished all that. And it seemed to go really, really quick. Because they got a lot of storylines running now, I guess, with the different characters. Yeah. And it's all very good and interesting and stuff. Like, I don't think this is a spoiler, but if people are really worried about spoilers, well, you know, turn off your thing.
It's a year past, so I'm going to let you just let her rip, because we actually do a play-by-play on the Citadel Cafe when the season is live and broadcast on HBO.
Okay.
Every week we do like a recap and a complete spoiler-filled episode. So
okay, so we're good.
Last year we talked about season 3 in detail, so you just go nuts.
Good. It was a lot gorier, I thought, than some of the past seasons.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and I'm not a huge fan of that. But you know, I don't know. I think I get a little frustrated that I think sometimes with cable shows they do stuff just because they can, mm-hmm. not because they need to.
Yep.
And it started to feel a little bit that way to me. Whereas in past seasons it didn't really come off like that. This season seemed to have more. I don't know, sex, nudity, and gore than prior seasons. It's not like the other seasons were devoid of that, but this one just seemed more gratuitous for some reason to me. I don't know why.
Yeah, you're right. And I remember having that discussion with Jocelyn, because we watch it together, and that's always a little bit of an awkward, you know, kind of moment when there's like real heavy gratuitous sex or nudity and violence happening, and you're just kind of sitting there watching it with your girlfriend. It's like, okay, this is a lot. It's a lot happening on the screen at the same time, but we did feel the same way. We thought that some of it seemed to be a little bit, it didn't really fuel the story.
I
noticed some of that this new season on House of Cards. I won't get into any details because I know that some people are probably still watching that. That's pretty fresh.
Right.
But there were some...
haven't gotten into that yet.
Oh, really? Oh, it's so good. It's such
a
good show.
I've heard of it.
But there are a couple of sex scenes that I did not really feel pushed any character or story forward. And they were just doing it because they could, because it's Netflix and they don't have to worry about... they don't have to worry about, you know,
ratings
or cable subscribers or like that kind of stuff. They're not part of a package in terms, they're their own package and they pay them for themselves 10 times over. So they're not too concerned about that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, at the same time, you also have to argue like, well, you know, if Netflix has the ability to do like, you know, say same sex scenes in a show and they just do it without a thought, that's also a kind of a good thing moving forward as far as liberal sensibilities and just like, no, we're not, you know, this is a thing, it happens, we're just going to make them this way because sure, you know, like it should be a, you know, an accepted thing across the board. So, you know, I can see both sides of the story. But if it's not driving your narrative, I still kind of feel a little, I don't know, a little smacked in the face with it, I guess is what it was.
Over the top. I think they didn't need to push it quite as far.
Yeah.
Yeah, but overall, I mean, it was awesome. Like I said, I plowed through it. I was like enjoying every minute of it.
Oh, it's such a good series. Have you read the books?
I have not, and that's probably my next step. Although I don't, I want to read. There's a lot of reading I want to do. I have a lot of books and iBooks and stuff that I buy, and I never seem to get to it because I'm just so busy. And I know that's a cop out, but sort of like when you code and you read news articles all day, you know, so that I'm prepping for the show, it's sort of like at the end of the day when you have your extra bit of free time, it's kind of the last thing you want to do, or the last thing I want to do is read. I just want to veg out with, you know, some television or a movie or something like that. And yeah, about as deep as I get is I'll watch a documentary on Netflix. It's like, okay, that's my more intellectual relaxation. But yeah, I like reading, but I just don't tend to find the time for it.
Well, and that's how I feel about the art book collections that I have. You know, I've got two or three that I received, you know, for Christmas gifts this year that I've barely even cracked the foreword on. And it's something that I will, you know, get into and enjoy over coffee on a Saturday, but to get it into my daily routines, like I eat, sleep, and breathe art all day long. So at the end of the day, the last thing I want to do is open up a book and read about more art. You know, like I'm at that point, I'm looking for like an escapism, you know, like situation, like you said, you know, a documentary or something on Netflix. You know, well, for example, we've been watching like kind of, you know, one episode of House of Cards at the end of the night, you know, right, to kind of cap everything off. And sometimes we need a palate cleanser, depending on how intense that show is. As I think a lot of people have done with Game of Thrones and The Walking Dead, like they can be some very intense shows. And just if it's the last thing that you do before you call it a night, sometimes you have to find like, you know, the half an hour comedy or maybe even an animated film or something like that on Netflix to kind of clear your head, right, before the subconscious, right, mind takes over.
that's when I'll watch something like another show I discovered recently and really enjoyed was Oddities. You familiar with that one?
No, what's it about?
It's so they did initial one in New York, and there's a new season or half season or something on San Francisco. It's a like a reality TV show about, and it's just about a half hour, and it's like an odd kind of curio shop that's sort of focused on macabre and like circus sideshow kinds of artifacts and stuff like that. So they'll have like weird, you know, things like mummy cats and things like that they sell and people bring in, and yeah, it sounds odd, and it is very entertaining and just, you know, dumb stuff.
Yeah, well, it's just, you know, the things that, you know, are out there in the deepest, darkest corners of the internet that are now being kind of brought to light with a television show.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Exactly, but it's fun and it's done very lighthearted, and they'll have like circus performers and sideshow performers come in and they'll do their, you know, they'll do their acts and stuff like that. So it's kind of fun.
Very cool. Very cool. Peyton, a friend of mine, co-host on the show a lot, would really enjoy that. He likes those kind of like strange kind of nook and crannies of the world sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's like Antiques Roadshow meets vampires or something like that.
Nice. Very, very cool. Well, the other thing that has been gracing my Netflix this week has been Epic, which is an animated film, and I believe it was like 2011, maybe, when it came out. No, it was 2013. Wow.
Starring Conan O'Brien.
Was it Conan O'Brien that was in it?
No. No, I saw the movie The Dad in that.
Totally modeled after Conan O'Brien. Yeah, I can totally see that. The hair is absolutely there. No, it did suffer from, you know, kind of a lot of celebrity voice actors who didn't necessarily fit the type of character they were playing. Colin Farrell was the main guy, or one of the main guys, along with a couple of other actors. I'm looking it up on IMDb right now. Blake Anderson, Allison Bills, Jim Conroy, Colin Farrell's in there. Who else was in there? I feel like there was some other people. There was a rapper, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he was one of the slugs in the movie.
Right.
And it was one of those animated films that kind of teeter-totters on, it could be really, really good, but then it's also, you can see the producer's hand in it saying, no, this makes money, put this in the movie. And you're just like, oh, these elements just stick out like sore thumbs. You know, like there is some unfortunate smack you in the face made for 3D. We're flying through the forest kind of shots. For those of us that are familiar, Epic is a story about, you know, little people that live in the forest and they ride on hummingbirds and bugs, and there's talking slugs and stuff like that. And it's all about saving the forest from certain doom and the villain. And the villain is, again, not very convincing. He looks menacing, but the second he opens up his mouth, like, he doesn't have a lisp, but he's very soft-spoken. and you expect him to be venomous and angry and mean, and he's just kind of calm all the time, and it doesn't really sell it. So, I mean, it had some...
He's
some...
that reserved kind of evil.
Yeah, and it's weird, because I thought it was going to be someone... that I knew, because like he sounded like, you know, some of the actors you see in some British films here and there, but he's a mm-hmm. German actor that I've never seen in anything. He just out of nowhere. I don't know why they cast him. It was really kind of strange. But the villain looks like the kind of guy that should be played by like Alan Rickman, right? Like he needs that Snape, that kind of bite to him, and he just doesn't deliver. But on the plus side, it was a really imaginative film. It was based loosely on a series of children's books called The Leaf Men or mm-hmm. something very similar. And
yeah, you know, like the Leaf Men and the Brave Good Bugs.
Yes.
By exactly. William Joyce.
Exactly. So here you are.
Sorry, that was the writer, right?
Yes. Screenwriter. Schooling me on
just on got my IMDb. Research.
No, I know. I'm just teasing.
Cheating.
but it was, you know, it's a unique story. It's got some really fun design elements to it. Like, you know, the leaf men ride hummingbirds, just like, you know, knights would ride horses. The Boggins are these weird kind of gremlin looking type characters, and they ride like rats or bats, any kind of like, you know, gross kind of animal in the forest that would be about that size, moles. Right. That sort of stuff. And they have this really neat way of portraying the armor for the Boggins, too. It's like, you know, their acorn top helmets or birch bark shields, that kind of stuff. And there's a really, really cool scene in the film where the Boggins attack the Leafmen. And what they've done is that they've all pinned themselves up against a tree with the bark shields on the outside. So it looks like tree bark. And then they ambush them by all kind of attacking at the same time. And these things are roughly the size of like a butterfly in terms of their scale. And right. Of course, with CG animation these days, they do this really amazing peel of like thousands of these Boggins kind of revealing that they're not the bark of the tree. And the tree just kind of peels away and turns into this swarm of bad guys that are coming to attack the queen. And there's some really amazing scenes in what ultimately... is kind of a canned story. It kind of does the, you know, good guy always wins. You kind of see the plot points coming a mile away. And there was
still
some
fun though.
Oh, it's still very fun. Yeah. There were some opportunities that I feel like they did capitalize on and some other opportunities missed. So have you seen it before?
Yeah. Yeah. Is this a, this is a DreamWorks, right? I mean, this is the classic. I think it's a DreamWorks. I want to say.
No, that's the thing. It's not. It's
like a DreamWorks film. Is it Blue Sky?
Yes, it was Blue Sky.
Yeah. So Blue Sky kind of goes along the same model of often I think of DreamWorks, where, you know, DreamWorks has this philosophy unlike, say, Pixar. You know, Pixar does like one film every year, year and a half or something like that, because they really focus on story, whereas DreamWorks, I think, tends to try to just like make it up on volume. And then the stories become a little cliche and stuff like that. And I don't know what the deal with Blue Sky is, because they always seem to have more of that DreamWorks vibe, even though I don't think they put out as many films.
No, I think they're a smaller place.
It's probably because they're a smaller house. But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of, and I don't know if that's maybe that just because they have to, like you said, kowtow to producers to actually get the money to get their stuff made. So maybe it starts out as this really great concept and story and then sort of degrades as Hollywood takes over. You know, it'd be interesting to know the inner workings from the artist's perspective through to final production, right? That's kind of what happens in that industry, I think.
And I'd be curious to see how close they stayed to the storybook. I mean, they probably had to deviate quite a bit by the time they were done.
Yeah, you always do. But like you said, it's the thing is you have those opportunities to be original, or you have the opportunities to sort of, you know, fall back on those old cliches that you know are going to work. And, you know, generally when you're a smaller studio or production house like that, the producers will often not let you take any kind of risks. So what you end up in the end is not maybe something that you originally intended or would have liked. Whereas like, you know, a Pixar, they're going to do whatever they want. You know, mm-hmm. they're going to take any kind of risk they want, because they don't have to follow any kind of rules, you know, they're sort of footing the bill and they're going to get the money just because they're Pixar, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that shows in their films too, you know, and I feel like, although, I mean, I have to say that some of the Disney animated films, like, so not the Pixar ones, but the actual Disney in-house animated ones have improved quite a bit, because I really did enjoy Frozen. I thought that was a step up from what they've could have been doing over the last little while. You know, it just, it had some different kind of moments and some, you know, they took some risks and I appreciated that. You know, like it was kind of a modern princess tale and they didn't have to be. It could have very much been just the next Beauty and the Beast or the next Cinderella, and they decided to up the ante a little bit, and I thought that was cool. So I mean, my verdict on Epic is, you know, still very watchable, you know, obviously a nice palate cleanser, as I mentioned,
right?
It's very pretty, like it's really easy to watch. It amazes me these days what is possible with, you know, CG, you know, rendering and all that kind of stuff, where it's a cartoon, but then the water looks real and like there's leaves and blades of grass everywhere. It's like the amount of technology behind these films these days now is just staggering.
I know we're getting close to time, but I'll just mention one other thing, because I just saw it the other night, because again, it just showed up on iTunes, and I was going to wait to rent it, but I got an iTunes gift card I decided to plunk down the money since it was the Academy Award winning film of the year, Gravity. I had not seen Gravity.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know. Have you seen Gravity?
No, I haven't.
Amazing.
Really?
I knew nothing about it. I didn't watch the Oscars. I didn't. And I think that may have helped. But yeah, unbelievable. Something I didn't realize is that there's only two characters.
Oh, wow.
In the whole film. So just think about that for a second. Think about trying to do a really compelling, and it was the same sort of thing. It was over before I realized it. I was like, "Oh, that was it." Just ended, and it was because I was so caught up in sort of the story. And then it wasn't until then I realized, "Oh, there was only two characters in that."
Wow, and that's George Clooney film. And Sandra Bullock, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the special effects. I don't know how they did all that work, because it's, you know, it's, I don't think it's giving anything away to say it all happens in outer space. Yeah, crazy. Fun. Wow. I mean, just scene after scene, it doesn't slow down, doesn't stop. The story is good. I don't know how I felt about this. The story was good. There was enough there. In the sort of the message that's in it and stuff like that, to pique my interest. But it was really just, you know, you kind of really wanted to know what was going to happen next, and it didn't disappoint. It just kept getting to sort of the next thing. So,
wow.
Yeah, I did really enjoy that.
Good to know. I'm a little shocked that I had absolutely no idea that the Oscars had happened. Like zero. And I normally,
it was
at least
like
hear
six
about
Academy
that.
Awards, and I think it won Best Picture. I'm pretty sure it won Best Picture.
When
I think
were the Oscars? Saying, right? Was it this weekend, or was it?
Or is it only up? Is it only, maybe it's only nominated and they haven't happened yet?
I don't think that. I usually see. I normally know.
Did
when
I blow it? I don't know.
I don't. So well, if it won, it won. Everybody knows by now. I usually hear it. I thought they might just be nominations.
Oh, maybe only the nominations were announced. Well, it's up for six Oscars.
Yeah, if only I was attached to a device that I could look up the Oscars and find out when they are in 2014. March 2nd, they have not happened yet.
Oh.
So see. It's nominated.
So it was nominated for six Oscars.
There you go.
And I can see why.
Okay. Well, that's good picture. That it comes highly recommended.
It could win Best Picture, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, my Apple TV updated today or yesterday, and of course...
And now I'll probably find out it's not even nominated for Best Picture.
And across the top of it, of the movies, of course, iTunes has refreshed all their new stuff, and Gravity is right there next to Frozen, as a matter of fact, as some of the movies that you can rent on iTunes now. So I would imagine that Frozen is probably up for Best Animated Picture, I would think. So if you are pressed for time, sir, then I will not, I would not want to keep you from your next engagement. So, I mean, feel free to plug and let people know where they can find the MacCast and where they can find you and all the cool things that you're up to online.
Sure. Yeah. You'll find me at MacCast.com. That's the website, but probably the best place to go is iTunes and just search for MacCast, which is the podcast. I also do a weekly more iOS focused podcast. So if you're more of an iPhone, iPad kind of person, you can check out We Have Communicators. That's actually hosted by Michael Johnston. And I do that show with another guy named Jeff Gamet, who is the executive editor at the Mac Observer.
Nice. It's a great name. Blog. Great name for the show.
Yeah, that was my name. It used to be called iPhone Alley, but that site that it was associated with got sold, and so we rebranded the show, and I picked We Have Communicators.
Yeah, very clever. So. I wish my iPhone would make that original Star Trek noise when I opened it, like instead of the lock noise, I wish it would just make like the whoop whoop whoop.
I'm sure there's a jailbreak hack for that. If
oh,
you want
probably.
Go in for that sort
I don't
of
want to jailbreak my phone. I just want options.
Yeah. So, and that's it. And MacCast pretty much, you know, on social media, MacCast on Twitter, MacCast on app.net, MacCast on Google Plus. So
very, very cool, man. It's been fantastic to have you on the show.
This was super fun. Sorry if we didn't get into all the topics.
No, it's quite all right. You know, like, it's kind of a fly by the seat of my pants show. So it just, if what we have time for, we have time for. And if we don't, we don't. It's nice like that. That's one thing I always find, it's a nice selling point when I invite guests on, is that there's no homework. We're just talking about whatever you've been up to, you know? So it usually works out for the better.
I'm looking forward to seeing you in Utah in July then.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, no, we're looking forward to it already. I mean, I'm trying to not to get too excited because like you, I'm busy and 4 months is a long way away at the moment for vacation.
Before you know it, because I'm getting ready to go to Macworld, which is at the end of March here.
Oh, wow.
Coming up, so... And that flew by because they actually pushed it back. It used to be in January and then it was in February and now it's in March. And I was like, oh, I got to wait till March. But it's, you know, now it's less than a month away. So it's like, oh, I got to get ready. So the time flies.
Nice. Right on. Well, I shall cut you loose, sir. And I will, I guess, pick up with you probably on Twitter. Thanks for sticking around through the tech glitches and Adam's tight schedule, but he was super fun to have on the show, and looking forward to maybe even having him back on again soon with more Mac stuff. The Internet Minute this week is brought to you by Tweaked Audio. The Citadel Cafe is proudly sponsored by TweakedAudio.com. For high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds, visit TweakedAudio.com and use our code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. There are 7 different styles and colors, mic'd sets available. They are compatible with iPods, iPhones, Android devices, and MP3 players of all types. And there's a lifetime warranty. So visit tweakedaudio.com and check out the TCC offer code for your new set of super cool earbuds. The Internet Minute this week is just going to be me because Mr. Adam of the MacCast had to take off. He is a very busy man with Macworld coming up at the end of the next month. Videogamesartwork.com is my first pick. This is what it sounds like. It is a big site that collects a lot of public concept art, splash art, and other things related to video games. There's everything from WildStar to League of Legends to Diablo and everything in between on this site. And if you are a fan of video games and video game artwork, I would highly recommend that you check out videogamesartwork.com. It's I lose hours just kind of poring over this stuff, especially the more painterly type things. And of course, it's no secret that I'm a huge fan of the art direction on WildStar, the upcoming MMO from Carbine. So videogamesartwork.com is a great site to go check out your favorite artwork and favorite, I guess, even artwork from upcoming games too. So if you're a fan of like the Halo franchise or, you know, new games that are coming out, you might be able to sneak some, not spoilers, but maybe get a glimpse of what's coming in the future. And last but not least, the 3D puzzle of Westeros. This is something that I caught on Mashable earlier this week, and it is it's a 3D puzzle, so those kind of, you know, foam backed puzzle pieces like you see for castles and even some Star Wars stuff. Like I think there's a Millennium Falcon one. This is of obviously the map of Westeros and the Eastern Kingdoms from Game of Thrones. And it's a 3-layered map. So there's the base layer, which is like, you know, your oceans and your continents and stuff like that. There is another layer that gives some height and some mass to the continents and kind of makes them kind of stand out a little bit. But then there's the 3D landmarks. And these things are castles, sigils of houses, you know, different areas, the wall, certain places where possibly characters might have died, different things like that that are kind of added to the map as custom pieces as a final touch. And they are super, super cool. Word of warning, though, there might be some spoilers if you have not seen the show or read the books up to the point where we are now. The maps can sometimes contain, you know, grave sites, places where people have passed away, so you don't want to spoil that for yourself. But the 3D puzzle of Westeros is very, very cool, and it is only about $60, and it's a fair size. It's a good, about half the size of a coffee table, so if you're a Game of Thrones fan and you want to check this out, it's currently making some waves at the New York Toy Fair, or did last week when the Toy Fair was going on, and I think it's pretty cool. If this was underneath my Christmas tree next year, I'd be a happy camper. Well, that's it, folks. That wraps up another episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, and normally that is on joelduggan.com/live. Since we've moved over to Alpha Geek Radio, you can find the mobile stream at mobile.alphageekradio.com. I've also installed a new live page on the Citadel Cafe. Pretty easy to find. It's just thecitadelcafe.com/live. There's a link right in the menu on the website. And I've put a Alpha Geek Radio player inserted right on the page. The chat room is right below. The IRC information is all right there. So now it's very easy to be able to tune in live, just sit and listen and join the chat room and have some fun. So if you are at all inclined to check out the Citadel Cafe live, then by all means, stop on by. We'd love to have you. The music for the show is composed by Kevin MacLeod, and of course, the final podcast will be available on iTunes and via the website, thecitadelcafe.com. You can email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter or Facebook with just the show name. Friday nights is when my better half and her co-host Ryan give their best on the Gamers In podcast. That's 8:30 p.m. Eastern on amove.tv. If you're a gamer, tune in to Jocelyn and Ryan as they break down their opinions on the latest in gaming news and what they've been playing. Visit gamersinpodcast.com or amove.tv/TGI for details. As I mentioned at the top of the show, my name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am up to online at joelduggan.com, including my book, StarCrossed Volume 1, which is available in my web store. And something that I forgot to mention at the top of the show, because I was just so excited to have Adam here, is that I am now on Patreon. Patreon.com/joelduggan is where you can find my comic work. I've been drawing StarCrossed, my webcomic, for a little over 4 years. And I'm now trying to approach the world of webcomics with the value for value model. If you enjoy StarCrossed and you'd like to give me a tip, you can sign up on Patreon to become a patron of StarCrossed, and you get some cool perks. I've listed some goals on the page in terms of what I plan to do with StarCrossed and how, you know, your contribution can make a difference. And the great thing is that Patreon is such a laid-back kind of atmosphere that everyone is welcome. Even if you know, have a tight budget and you can't financially support by tipping, I say, like $1 a month, it's just as important, you know, for you to be able to tell your friends about Patreon, to possibly find your favorite musician or your favorite video blogger on Patreon. There's lots of fantastic artists out there doing their thing. And it's an opportunity for people like you to become a patron of the arts. So if you're a StarCrossed fan and you would like to stop by the Patreon website, it's patreon.com/joelduggan to find out what I've got going on there. All the perks are there, and I really appreciate your support and appreciate you sharing the information with anybody else that you think might be interested. You can follow me on Twitter, at Joel Duggan. You can follow me on Facebook, which is Joel Duggan Illustration. And that's about it. I've got no other co-hosts to throw it to, so you've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two, or one, because it's just me.